In today's episode, we will be talking about the month of the military child, highlighting moving and the perspective of some experts, our very own children.
Hi, and welcome back to the Virtual Compound. I'm Amelia.
I'm Lacey.
I'm Katie.
Time and date check-in. It is 6:18 p.m. on a, what day is it, Tuesday.
It is 9:18 p.m. also on a Tuesday. I hope, because Lacey said it was Tuesday.
And it is 11:18 in the morning, so a.m. on Wednesday here in Japan.
Do you have any, did you ever forget how to tell us the lottery numbers? You told us.
I have not, and if I did, I'm not sure I'd share.
Oh, well, fine. It would help to go a long way for the compound. I mean, getting it going if you did share.
True, but don't.
Just don't share it here, you know, text it to us instead.
Yeah. Or just, you know, help us buy all the things that we have to do for a podcast, which is actually a lot.
Yeah, yes. there is quite a bit. Yeah.
Didn't expect that.
I mean, it's been fun to learn how to use it all, though.
Yeah.
Had a lot of fun with that. But yeah, there was a lot more steps.
Yeah.
A lot more steps.
A lot more steps and a lot more just everything. I'm actually quite surprised.
Mm-hmm. But it's fun. I love it so far.
New skill to put on the resume.
Yeah. Got to build that resume.
Well, as you may have heard in our last episode, April is the month of the military child, and we are all blessed with our very own children to honor, and as I like to call them, my greatest arts and crafts projects.
Amelia.
I'm doing long division.
Well, that's fun.
So fun. Each episode, we'll have special guests, our own military brats, answering questions about their experiences and take on this military life.
We will also hear from our fellow arts and crafters and get their take on raising good humans in a life that isn't as consistent as we might like. As we continue in future episodes, we'll hear more from them, but we're going to talk about our experiences with moving and get some insight from our kids and those fellow arts and crafters, aka our husbands.
Only because Lacey, who says Jeremy and I are expert arts and crafters, and look at what we made, forgot you were talking about our husband. It's fine.
But it just makes it more entertaining. It's fine.
Okay.
I just spilled my water everywhere, and it's not sparkling water.
Okay, I about had a heart attack for you. Maybe we can get sponsored by LaCroix.
I know. Or Polar. I'll take any of them. Any of them.
True story.
Oh, good lead in, Amelia, with the homeschooling and long division. Lacey, what do you have to tell us?
With April being the month of the military child, we wanted to focus on military spouse-owned businesses that cater to children, and today we wanted to tell you about Jessica Stremmer, fellow military spouse and author of science-focused books for kids. Jessica's books encourage kids to think critically about the world around them, perfect for kids of all ages. As I've mentioned, I homeschool my kids, and I'm looking forward to using these books as companions to my kids' science curriculum. The best thing about Jessica's books, aside from the gorgeous illustrations, are the animal-focused plots, which I've noticed is engaging for all learning styles and ages. Her book Fire Escape details the impact of fires on wildlife. Great Barrier Reef takes readers on a journey to see the incredible aircraft carrier USS Arensky become a new home for marine life. And her latest book, Lights Out, explains the significant issue of light pollution and the impact it has on migrating patterns, which can be found at the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History. All of her books can be found through her website, jessicastremmer.com, at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and bookshop.org.
So, speaking of our arts and crafts projects, let's talk about their experiences moving. Obviously, they have their own insight and their vast range in age. I mean, the youngest of all of our children is my youngest. She'll be 2 this summer. And then my oldest is the oldest of all of our children, who is 18. So I have a pretty big gap, but you guys are kind of more in that like middle youth between, you know, 7 and, well, no, I guess Zoe's almost 13. So we've got this broad range of age. So we've had all of these different experiences of moving with our kids. And we already know that as mothers, things are different across the board, family to family, even base to base, but most drastically different is our experiences raising our children in the military versus our peers and family members in the civilian world. So, like, Amelia, what's something that you feel like is completely different that you've dealt with raising kids in the military life than your civilian peers?
I think the amount of, like, transientness. Like, they make a friend, and that friend is gone next year or in 6 months. And, you know, especially, like, in Sam's hometown, his friends he was friends with since kindergarten and his friends that have moved back there, they'll have the same friends from kindergarten. I think that's really different. And then I also think, and this kind of applies to military families, depending on, like, where you're stationed and what state, but for me personally, it has almost never applied. Being, like, close to family. You know, because a lot of my friends are like, oh yeah, my mom's going to come and watch the kids so I can go on a date with my husband. That will almost never happen. Like, yeah, our parents would come out and visit, but, or, you know, my sister or something like that. But it, we were fortunate enough to be close to family, and the fact that we were on the other side of the state, which is Texas. So it's not a small state. It's not like we were on the other side of Rhode Island. We were on we were still a 2 hour plane ride away. And yeah, I would say the transient nature of the people in our lives. And then also the, like, how far we are from family. Is
That's definitely when I was, a tough one.
Yeah. When I was writing this question, I was actually thinking back to when I was 19 and my sister was having my first niece, and her, you know, labor and delivery plan, like, birth plans were a thing back then. And her experience was completely different than my experience just a few short years later. Guess who that is?
A goose.
My experience a few short years later was completely different than my sister's, because we were in the military, you know, hospital and care system. And that was completely different until our last one. Like, it's like, it took almost 18 years for the military to catch up to the civilian world, as far as being a little bit more homeopathic and birth plan and all of those things.
The transient is a big part of it, but also the family side, because, you know, when we moved to Okinawa, the first cousin on one side of our family was born, and that changed the dynamic entirely. And while they're close coming back, the actual family dynamic is not the same. And that's fine. You know, we chose this life. We did. I mean, our children did not choose this life. And that's where it's really tough as the mom, because we can handle, we can adapt, we can choose to handle, we can choose to adapt. They don't have that choice. It was taken away from them simply because we chose to have children and we chose this life before they came along. And that is a really tough one, because we are out of sight, out of mind. And that can be really hard on rebuilding those relationships after coming back. Relationships have not been rebuilt as well as they were before. And it's hard to do that from a long distance. But in addition to that, it's also not having the physical support basically guaranteed, because our spouses are not guaranteed to be around. And while a lot of civilian families, they still travel and they do things, and some of them are honestly gone more than our husbands are. I also see how taken for granted it is, and how some people just choose to not, like, get off work to help us, you know, get one kid to dance and the other kid to swim. And it's like, we don't have that option. And while we aren't, you know, a single parent on paper, in action, sometimes it comes across that way. And that can be really difficult on the girls, my girls, just because they get pulled back and forth. You know, Lexi spends just as much time down in Annapolis while Zoe's there for dance as Zoe does, but she doesn't have any friends down there. And she has to play by herself at the library for 2 hours every day. And that's tough. This has been one of the harder, they were both really excited to come back here because it's our house, but it's also been really difficult because there are no built-in friends, and we don't even have, we are more limited on the ways to find those friends. And that's where I feel like I'm not a failure for it, but you know, when you can't provide something for your kids, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to
get that. I mean, especially like you guys came back and you were in a duty station for 1 year. So that's really hard to know that you're going to be there 1 year. And like your kids need friends. You guys need people. But at the same time, like that's even when it's a 3 year duty station, like after you and I left, Amelia was like, forget it. I'm not making friends. I'm sure she did because she's Amelia and she's
right.
She's actually very loving.
She is. She is. You are. Don't give us that look. You know you are. You know we're right. Yeah. Well, and with us being there.
See the thing I sent on Instagram? Don't lie to Steven. Don't do that.
We're not. Okay. Well, once
she
you.
She had a smart mouth and she hated most people equally.
Oh, but see the most. The point is you said most. That means that there are still a few out there that can nudge through that crack in the armor.
We're going into year six. I think I'm just going to like not have friends.
I mean, I understand that too. That's why we did the pod. That's why we're doing the podcast so that we don't have to worry about that.
Exactly.
But yeah, the girls had a tougher time in New Jersey, Zoe specifically, because she knew she was only going to be there for a year and she did make friends. And, but at 11, 12, there's not the same type of connectivity that we have. And so when we moved, she was sad, but not heartbroken like she was when she left Okinawa or even when she made the move to Okinawa. But it has taken her 7, 8 months to actually open up and try to have friends outside of school or like carry that friendship outside of school or try to carry that friendship outside of dance even. Like they're there.
Yeah.
But, and she even admitted it to me. She's like, I know that I am not opening up and I am getting better. She finally had her first sleepover that wasn't with her best friend who lives in, who also came over from Okinawa and they live in Northern Virginia, but we don't get to see them all that often. But she finally had her first like approved sleepover last week after all of this time.
Well, so that's Abby too. I mean, Abby actually, she talked about that in, well, I guess it was the first set of questions that we asked her about how she doesn't necessarily like open up and make friends very easily and put herself out there, but for a different reason. I think it's a personality thing, but coming back for Emma's senior year, that was kind of like the biggest thing was I'm only going to be here for a year. Like why try? And that didn't last very long. Thankfully, like she got excited and she kind of did all the things and was, eager, but I think that as moms, that's the hardest thing to see them go through. But in the end, ultimately, I think it really does make them more well-rounded people.
No, I agree. It does. And I think that they are both thankful for it because they do thankfully get along together very well and they lean into each other even when they fight. There's a not quite 5 year distance or difference between the two of them. But when it comes down to them versus the PCS world, they are their do or dies when their besties aren't with them. Now you throw Aubrey and Clara into the mix and that sister is, I don't know how that's going to go, but when it's the two of them, they'll take on the world together.
I think Emma, or maybe it was Brody. No, I didn't ask Emma. It was Brody and Abby. They both touched on it, but Abby really hit it. She was talking about how even though it was really hard leaving here, we've been here for 5 years, it was almost everything she remembered going back to Okinawa because she went to a public school. And the only time she's ever been to public school in Okinawa, it was actually a lot easier than coming back here because all of the kids that she was surrounded with were in the military population. Now, some of them are obviously like civilian kids and things like that, but because we have our own culture, the military culture is its own, and the kids within that have their own culture. I think that that was probably like the best duty station for that age group at that time, because like that culture is something that they can all recognize. I mean, standing the national anthem before a movie plays, like you talked about, with Zoe recognizing that, or when you're on base and colors plays, That's my favorite part
Yeah.
of being on base.
Yeah.
And Colors is the national anthem and Reveille and the Japanese national anthem in Japan.
Yeah.
Like when you're on base, like the world stops, the kids know to freeze and turn towards the music or wherever there's a flag, and like seeing all the cars pull over and nobody going at stoplights with their hazards on. That's probably one of my favorite aspects of life on base.
Yeah.
Just because you see these really tiny kids just stop and turn.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was interesting because Zoe came in the other day, or we got in the car, and she's like, "Mom, we live just close enough to base. We live about a half mile from one of the side gates. And we live just close enough to base that when you're outside, you can hear Colors and you can hear taps and all that stuff." And she was taking out the trash and she was like, "And it went off and I had to like stand still and there were no flags around, but I guess our neighbors had like a wreath with the flags." So she like turned and like aimed herself towards that. I was like, "That's amazing. You haven't had to do that in over a year."
Yeah.
And you heard it. And she's off base, so she's not actually mandated to do it off base, but yeah, she did it. Nobody was watching. I don't know that there was a single person outside, but she still felt compelled to do it. And that was really cool to hear. The interesting thing with that, with the differences between bases, is the Marines do it at sunup, sundown. The Army does it three times, but it's different. So they do it in the morning. Mm-hmm. Then they do it at 5, and then they do it at 10, and it doesn't change. So like the Marines fluctuates throughout the year, and the Army is done at the same sunset time. Yeah. But the
so
Army
is the Air Force. The Air
time.
Force was at 5 or 6 every day. Amelia, you're still there.
Oh yeah. When do they do colors
five.
And stuff? 5.
According
do they,
to my son, yeah. It's 5.
Do they do one at 10?
He would know.
He would know.
It's 5. Yeah, at 10 they play something.
Reveille is 7:30.
In the yes, and then what about at night?
Taps.
He's asleep, but that's at 10.
So 7:35 and 10. So same as ours. Yeah, but that's one of those things that you have to get used to when you switch back and forth between living on different bases, living on a Marine base, living on an Army base, living on, and sometimes, we are all military, or we are all Marines, but there are times in which we are living on other bases or near them. So Amelia, now her husband is working with Marines, but because housing's so weird in Okinawa, they're living on an Air Force base. We are in a joint billet, so that means that my husband is working with civilians and all of the branches, and so we are on an Army base, well, near an Army base. And then Lacey over here, who has abandoned us. Just kidding. But
we are still, I mean, it takes me 8 minutes to get to the gym on base. So we're right out the back gate and it's awesome. Like hearing the boom booms all the time. I actually really enjoy that, the sound of freedom. So there's that. And then we can hear Colors at night. And it's just a really safe area. I really like it. I love being around a base. Any even civilian who lives around a base loves it. I mean, yes, they can get rowdy. They're Marines. Eleanor Roosevelt really said it the best.
She did.
They can get rowdy and wild, but it's like the safest place I've ever been. And honestly, I remember when we were in Okinawa the first time. My kids were little. I only had the two little girls with me. The other two were in school. We were getting groceries. We were coming out of the commissary on Camp Courtney grocery store. One of my like boxes on the bottom, maybe it was sparkling water or something, it like fell out. And a Marine like hustled over and picked it up. I was like, "Oh, here, ma'am, let me help you with that." And like, I bristle at this. I'm like, "I've got it. Clearly, I could probably lift more than you, bro." But I just thought that was really cool. You don't see that. And he was a like 20 something Marine, like he was super young, so I couldn't outlift that guy. But I was still like, you don't see this. I never experienced that on the Air Force base or the Army base or the Navy base or anything. Not to say that there aren't, you know, airmen, soldiers, Navy seamen that wouldn't do that. I just never encountered it.
Right. Well, and you encounter it even less out in town, you know, unless you're just happen to be in a really great place. You're not going to see it there either.
I don't know. I think that's like those elements are some of the differences that we have as far as our lifestyle. I mean, we talk about the vocabulary in every episode where we have something and we try to, you know, tell people ahead of time, like, here's the acronym you're going to hear today. But even just in our daily lives and the jokes between branches, and our kids and the jokes between branches that our kids witness, it's pretty cool. We're really fortunate to be able to experience this, but
it is,
you know, it doesn't come without cost.
This is true. And that cost is often just trickles down to our kids in a way that, man, they are so strong. Like the stuff that we don't necessarily think they realize until they know how to voice it. And then they voice it and you're like, yeah, I didn't really mean for you to add that level of worry to your shoulders.
It gets heavy.
It does. Yeah. That the last surprise deployment for us just recently, that one, I mean, we had a 6-day warning and that one was tough in a lot of ways, but that one sat very heavy compared to any of the other times that he was gone. And I don't know exactly why it was, you know, it wasn't necessarily the safest location for him to go, but I don't know if it was the lack of foreknowledge or if it was the timing, the fact that it had run over by Christmas.
Deployments are one of the hardest things that the kids have to deal with. Charlotte actually handled the 9-month deployment like a champ. She didn't shed a tear the entire time he was gone, but the moment she hit his arms on that homecoming, she broke down and was like absolute hysterics. And that along with the goodbyes is what breaks you as a mom.
Yeah, that is, the goodbyes are so rough. Zoe had a really tough time a year or so into it in Okinawa because a lot of her friends were leaving. And that was a really hard time for her. But has Josh, I mean, I don't know about with Clara. Like, obviously there's Clara and Lexi, and that was like, I don't know what it was like at your house after we left, but the short drive to the hotel and when Wyatt went to get gas in your van, it was not pretty in our hotel room that night. But like, how have your kids handled all of the fluctuating?
So with friends leaving, I think at first they're so young that time is just kind of like, I mean, you know, your kids are little and time passes so differently when they're little. Mm-hmm. You notice it when they're babies and the fact that like, well, I did, like Sam deployed when Clara was a few months old and then came back when she was over a year. And he like reached down into her stroller to get her and she like slapped his hands away.
That
like,
doesn't surprise me at all.
Who are you?
That's such a Clara thing to do.
It's so Clara.
Don't touch me. And she would take, if he served her breakfast, like he tried to, you know, give her breakfast the next day. And she took the bowl like off her little high chair while looking at him and like dumped it out. Like, I'm not accepting.
You're a stranger.
Strange man. Especially because where Sam deployed that time was like almost no connectivity. So there was no like FaceTime or Skype or any of that. The kids did not see or hear from him for 9 months.
Right.
And I talked to him, but I also noticed that especially for Josh, talking on the phone with Sam was harder than Sam just being gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's also like an interesting thing civilians don't understand. They're like, oh, you're like withholding the father, their child. Like, no, because if I let him talk to his dad, he's 3.5, 4, and he truly does not understand that like, daddy, please come home is not going to work. And it's easier for daddy to just be gone.
Yeah.
And then daddy come back instead of all this like back and forth.
Yeah.
And like deployment wise, it's easier when they just go. And just time passes differently when they're little. But as we've been out here and seen more and more people go and the kids get older and older, obviously, it gets harder and harder. Especially, you know, Josh is 9, so he fully realizes that like his friends are now across an ocean and we're not just gonna go see them. Like it's a huge major ordeal to go see friends and they're not just across the ocean and everybody's congregated in this lovely one base. They're far flung, and we live on an Air Force base. And so, like his one of his best little friends that was right across the street, we'll never be stationed with them again because they're Army.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
I'd like to go visit them, but like they'll never be stationed with us again. And several people that have moved, their Air Force, their whatever, and the likelihood of us actually being in the same location is almost
Minimal.
none.
Yeah.
Like you can maybe with Marines, we'll be close, but the Air Force has 56,000 places to go to, and Marines have
Yeah.
like five. Should the Marine Corps see fit, we'll probably wind up close to each other at some point in time. But yeah, I think Josh really gets it now that like this is goodbye. And
Yeah.
you, if you see this person again, it is going to be years before you see them again. And I think Clara kind of gets it now too. Like she's like, I'm this. So Lexi moving away. Sorry, the only person that really impacted her was
I
Lexi
mean,
out of the whole Wilson family.
that's the same. That's fine.
Lexi moving away was the first time she cried about someone moving away because other times she's like, okay, bye. Like, see you later. And later could be in 2 years. And she'd be like, wow, this was no time at all.
Right.
But yeah, that was the first time she actually cried about someone moving away and really realized, like, I'm not going to see this person. I'm not going to see them tomorrow, and I'm not going to see them the next day, but the day after that day, as she says, or the day after that day. That one hit her pretty hard. And our friends that had a baby, they moved, and Clara sat like holding the baby, just like crying, because she
Oh.
knows she was like, well, the next time I see the baby, she's gonna be big and she won't be a baby anymore. That's hard that like she really gets it now. Clara asked me to please stop talking about it, because
It's
probably because it makes
upsetting. Yeah.
me
Well,
sad.
Lexi would be doing that too. I mean, the discussions of this makes her upset. She's also very good at making herself cry, but this is a legitimate, like we talked about, opening that present at Christmas and being confronted with like the best friend that she can't actually like hold is tough in all the ways. And she, like Clara, they're finally at that age where it makes sense. Of course, I'd like to think it's a little bit easier that they can FaceTime some, but now that we're not homeschooling, she doesn't have quite as much flexibility for the late night rambles that she was doing when we were in New Jersey. But hopefully soon. I did tell her about the message that you sent me earlier, and she was like, "Wait, does that mean that I get to?" Because at first she thought that only I was going to get to see you. I was like, "No, that wasn't the point." She was like, "Oh, all the light."
I think, and I mean to like tie it all into being here and being in Japan, like the deployment, every service also calls defines a deployment as something different. Like you'll talk to an Air Force family and they'll say that their active duty service members been deployed like 50 times. And from a Marine perspective, we're like, that's not even possible. Like how is you can't deploy 50 times, because in a Marine deployment, and someone can correct me, I think it's 6 months.
Six
I
to
think
nine
that's what
months. Yeah.
6 to 9 months is
Yeah.
a deployment, and anything under 6 months is TY. And that's like classified as something different, and you get different money, and everything about it is different. So,
Yeah.
Sam went TDY. The whole world shut down during COVID, but somehow he managed to be gone all the time.
Did.
And he went TDY for up to like 3 or 4 months, and it's like, oh, well, that's a deployment, but it's not.
Yeah.
And I actually am of the belief that TDYs are harder than
Oh,
deployments
yeah.
because they come and go. They're here for 2 weeks and then they're gone for 4 weeks and then they're here for 5 days and then they're gone for a week. And
Yeah.
I think that is much harder. And you go TDY much more here in Japan because things they have to do are in America. And because of the nature of some of their jobs, it has to be in person. So they go to Hawaii or
Yeah.
they go to Quantico and they go for like a week
Yes.
and then they come back and their whole schedule's messed
Or
up. And
months for classes.
yeah, or
Yeah.
months for classes. And then they come back and then they go to the field and then they go to Guam and then they go like for an exercise, and it's here. And everyone says this isn't like a thing I've come up with in my own brain. the forces in the Pacific are some of the most active, like in the fact that they were always gone, and now this is the tip of the spear, and they're always doing something, and the tempo here is a lot. But the trade-off for that, to go back to what we're trying to talk about in this episode, is that we get to live in Japan, which is like, I can't say I would be like pushing Sam out the door in order to live in Japan. I wouldn't be like, please leave so we can live in Japan. We miss him, but it is pluses and minuses, right? Yes, he's gone a lot, but we live in
But
Japan.
we just, there's a view when you
So.
go in the Legion Gate, that view, like going down the hill
Yes.
towards the gym and being able to look
Yeah.
from the top of that hill over the East China Sea and sometimes seeing the rigs out there and like that stuff. And I mean, we went through that gate, what, how many times a week, if not a day, for dance classes and everything else. And that view got me every time. And more times than not, I would say, and even Wyatt and I, years in, we were like, we live in Japan. Like it was just this thing. And the views that we live in were just amazing. And the kids still love it. They still want to go back there. And I don't think, the exception to the deployment rule is the 31st Mew. And that's because they go out at 3 months. So they're a little bit shorter and they are considered a deployment, but it has to still be that like time frame. And so we had a few of those while we were there because that's why we went out. But I agree, the short stints are much harder on everybody. Wyatt, we had to be on the island for 20 months before Wyatt hit 1 year of solid time on island. And because and that included during COVID. He had two floats and he went back to the States 3 times and for various things. And yeah, similar situation. And that was hard for the kids. He missed a birthday and he missed a few different situations. And birthdays are tough. Birthdays and holidays are some of the roughest things that the kids have to go through. But like you said, getting to do all of that in Japan kind of eases that some. And then Japan comes back with them. And we have certain things that customs and culture that sticks with the kids. Obviously, Amelia, you guys are still there, so this stuff is still pretty fresh for your kids. They have to do it every day. But Lexi comes in, and the very first thing she does is those shoes come off, like at almost every single person's house. And I'm like, we should probably at least introduce ourselves before you start taking your shoes off in this house because they may not want that. But that's just a normal thing to do, and that happens with Lacey's kids too. And almost any time that she wants my attention, my first reply is height. Like from anywhere in the house, I reply with height. We started trying to use tadashi for the correct, like instead of answering with height. What are some of the like cultural aspects that seem to stick with Josh and Clara outside of what they're learning in culture classes, like that they just seem to do?
So shoes off, definitely. Like they take their shoes off. We've kind of always been a shoes off household because it always grossed me out. But shoes off has stuck. And, on the rare occasion that we do go to back to America, the kids like come in and they take their shoes off and people are like, oh, you can leave your shoes on. And both the kids are like, ew. Like, do you know how dirty that is? And then also I think, and not that my children are perfect at this, but actually, you know what? I'm gonna brag on them. They're really, really, really good at this particular aspect of like Japanese culture. When you go to theme parks and things like that in Japan and on trains, people wait in line very, very orderly and nicely and quietly. And we were in Kyoto with the kids, and Kyoto is like what everyone in America thinks Japan should look like, because it's all the old buildings and everything. And so we're in the train station getting ready to go to Arashima, which is where the bamboo forest is, and there's all these temples, and it's like a giant tourist thing. And my kids have traveled extensively around Japan, and we're on the train, and my kids are sitting there just, quietly, not eating their snack and drinking their drink, because you don't do that on the trains here. And there's these Americans. They could have been Canadians, but they're probably Americans, and they were very loud, and they're like drinking coffee and all this stuff. And both of my kids were like, kind of just like staring at them, like, this is not,
This is
you
not
know, they're like,
appropriate. What are you doing?
I know, Clara, they're not supposed to be eating. And she's like, I know, you know, and they kind of like side eye other Americans who are misbehaving now. And I mean, not necessarily misbehaving, just like not adapting to the culture of talking on trains and being loud and not waiting in line nicely, which is what my kids do. They do all those things now because you just wait in line. Like at Disney, you just wait there.
All of it. Well, and when we went to Tokyo again, I'll go back to your birthday like I did in the last episode. But when we went, and the reason I bring this up is a picture popped up the other day. I don't remember if I showed you or sent it to you, but it was Zoe. It's Zoe, Clara, and Lexi on a train in Tokyo. And Zoe's sitting there and she's got her arms out, and Lexi and Clara are both laying on her, and they all have their little masks on, and they're just sitting there like, they're basically asleep because who knows what we'd been, we just run them ragged that day. But they just huddled and they were silent. But any time we got on the train and Clara and Lexi, like, because we had decent, like 30-minute, metro rides, and anytime we got on there and Clara and Lexi would play, they would play, but they played like, this one's like, you couldn't hear them at all. Like, they were like super quiet and like didn't argue. And we've talked about how they can be like cats, but oh no, they were super respectful and quiet. They would turn around, and that was like, they tried to stay in their space and they didn't necessarily sit still, but they did a pretty good job at fitting in too. But it does take some practice, and it's awkward for us like adults to go into that, but the kids adapt pretty quick.
Well, it's strange to like, especially if you get on a train with like a friend or something like that, or you know, the rare occasion I get to travel with Sam, you get on a train and then you're just like, you can be having a conversation, and then those train doors close.
And
And they're.
it's weird because it's not always considered totally inappropriate to talk,
Yeah. I think
but
it's like if no one is talking,
yes.
like you don't want to be that person that's talking. But if there's like a little bit quiet chatter, then
Right. You
you
can do
know,
it.
you can have
Yeah. Like
a
the
little low
commuter, the
conversation.
longer trains, but a lot of the like city trains, everybody's by themselves. So they're not talking to each other anyway. And so if you just happen to be with a group, it is really awkward because you're the only one traveling with another person. Everybody else is by themselves. So they have their phones or they're like studiously ignoring everyone.
Yes. Well, and I think also like how comfortable my kids are with public transport. Also, like they have, and I know in other places in America, this is like a thing, but everywhere we've lived, it's not. You know, they have their little lanyard and it has their train card, and they just scan their little train cards and go through. And they, okay, what train are we getting on, and how many stops, and how like it's just so normal for them. And then also like culturally, Japan, and I've read a little bit that like foreigners think this, and Japan isn't like the safe haven that we make it out to be, but that is our reality. Like my reality is that Japan is a really, really safe place for like me and my children compared to America. And you know, my kids go into Family Mart and Lawson's by themselves. And I think it was my mom. We were going somewhere, my mom and dad, and I, you know, gave the kids 500 yen and was like, okay, go in and get a onigiri. And my mom was like, are you not going with them? No.
No, they'll be
No.
fine.
And I would not dream of sending my 9 and at the time 6-year-old into a store by themselves in America.
Oh
Like
no.
just, and especially where I couldn't see them or like bathrooms by themselves.
Oh yeah, and I've watched Lexi even. I remember this. It was at the end. I didn't do it when she was younger because three, she just didn't have a clue where she was going. But Zoe did, like from the food court at Rycon Mall to the bathrooms, which are all the way across. But you can, from a certain angle, you can see it, and then it's around a corner. But yeah, I let them go. Like, all right, it's right over there. You know where it is. Go. Because, I mean, and this works in our favor. Over there, our kids are the anomalies. Like, it is extremely noticeable when four little blonde, white-haired children come waltzing out. There are no blonde children in this country. Like, our children are the anomaly. So if they get lost, somebody's probably going to be able to find us and, like, bring them back. It's going to be really noticeable if that's the case. But they're also easy to track in a crowd.
Yeah. Well, and you see, you know, it's, if you remember, when we get to Japan, we have to go and do a newcomer's brief. And they talk to us about culture and things like that. And one of the first things that our briefer had said to us is, like, you will see children that you in your American culture think are too young or too small or too whatever to be alone. And they'll be on a train or on a bus or walking. And you need to understand these kids probably don't speak English.
Right.
And you need to not stop them because you will confuse them more. And, like, you will confuse them and you will probably scare them. And, like, they might miss a train or a bus or something. And you need to just let them go because they know where they're going and what they're doing. And you hear this and you're like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then you see a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if they're really 5, 6. I'm not sure. 6 or 7.
I mean, they're tiny, though, because even if they are 6, they're the size of little tiny 5-year-olds. Like, they're just
and you
little.
Watch them get on a train in Tokyo with, like, if they're in their little school uniform, they've got some of their school friends,
yeah,
you know, and ride for 30 minutes on this train. And then they get off and there's not a single adult in charge of them to be found.
Nope.
And she was so right. It is very, like, this small child is alone. Very, very alone.
Very alone.
And you see them walking home from school. And again, they look much too young to be doing that. But then also you have to think about that that show that's, like, about they give Japanese kids tasks
yes.
to do, like, independently, and, like, how can they do it?
Yes.
And it really is just, like, I think the kids are a little more, and I can confirm, you know, my Japanese friends or any Japanese listeners confirm or deny this. I think they just are a little bit more independent because yeah. they can be.
Well, and I would even argue to say that probably when we grew up, we had a lot of that independence. I mean, even you
yeah.
did, you
yeah.
you were away from your family at a much earlier age than any of the rest of us were. But we, growing up where I grew up, I didn't have access to those. I lived out in the country. So even though I was independent and I would go out and do things because my parents were at work, I wasn't in a city or I wasn't getting myself around. I was doing it all from there, not trying to get through even a smaller city in America from the mall back home. Mine was waiting for somebody to drop me off somewhere. And then I could be independent after getting that point. Whereas these kids are, okay, you walk out your front door and you're on your own until you walk back through your front door. And it's amazing. But our kids picked up some of that independence along the way.
That's one of the beautiful things about living in Okinawa. Like, it was 1950s America very much when we moved on to base our first tour.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, all right, when the lights come on, come home.
Yeah. Well,
we didn't see Emma all day on Saturdays.
I mean, you're not that far off in housing. A lot of the housing was built in the 60s, some of it in the 40s. So, I mean, it really is just kind of that way.
We live on base and it really does feel like it did growing up, or like what you see, like 1950s, like, 3 o'clock, the kids are kind of home from school, and my kids are always home from school, but open the front door and, like, I'll go to neighbors' houses and be like, have you seen the boys?
Yeah. Or now sometimes when we were on McTee, it was, you know, we had the neighborhood because the circle around the little yeah. neighborhood that I lived on is exactly 1 mile around. And so it was that with a little bit like side streets. So you had a neighborhood like page. And if anybody really couldn't find someone, then you got on there and you were like, I am looking for this child. Whose house is my child at? Please send them home. And home they come. I mean, they were locked on base. It's not like they were going anywhere.
My kids leaving there twice have brought fashion trends and all kinds of crazy things back and habits and words. The one I have the hardest time with is the leggings with the shorts. But that was a decision that she made at 9 years old, and it was fine. But for the other kids, you know, we asked all of them questions. We wanted to ask them questions specifically related to moving. And while a few of them are too young, particularly the one hanging on me. So sorry if the breathing is loud.
Oh, no, can't hear it.
She is way too young to answer any questions regarding moving because she was born in Japan just a year before we came back. But we did ask our other children some questions, and here's what they had to say.
Hi, Clara.
Hi.
Okay. So April is the month of the military child, and we are interviewing kids that are military kids, and you are a military kid. And we're going to talk about moving, okay? Where was the last time we PCS'd? What did we do? Where did we go?
Okinawa, Japan.
Okinawa, Japan. And how old were you when we moved?
Two.
Two. So you don't really remember a whole lot, do you?
No.
No.
Maybe two things, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask you some questions, okay? What was the most exciting part about moving overseas?
Eating sushi.
Eating sushi. Okay, what was unexpected about moving for you?
We were traveling a whole around the world, and it would take 4 hours on the plane, but I didn't really...
14 hours.
14 hours.
You didn't really realize how long we would be on the airplane,
yeah,
huh?
Because I fell asleep.
Yeah. What helped you get through our move?
Mommy and Daddy and Joshie. Because Joshua pushed me in a stroller because I was sleeping and I was two. And Mommy and Daddy were rolling all the suitcases two.
Yep. What is a good life lesson from moving to a new country?
We get to learn new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to learn about, like, stuff that we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff that we know but we forgot.
Oh, okay. Hi, Josh.
Hi.
We're going to be talking about moving. And you did a pretty big move, right?
Yes.
How long was it to get to our new duty station?
14 hours.
14 hours. That was just to get to one place. Then we had another flight, right?
Yes.
So it was like a whole day?
Yes.
Yep. And where did we move to?
Okinawa, Japan.
Where did we move from?
Camp Lejeune, North Carolina.
Yep. And how old were you when we moved?
5.
You were 5. Do you remember it?
Barely.
Okay. What was the most exciting part about moving overseas?
The night when you wake up and you're like, oh, I'm here. And then our friends took us out to eat ramen and go to the beach, and how close the beach was to us.
Yeah, that was the most exciting part for you.
Yeah.
What was the hardest part about moving overseas?
Leaving all my friends.
Leaving all your friends, yeah. Did you like leaving Glemma and Morfar at the airport?
No.
No, you didn't really like that, huh? I think you don't really remember, but that was pretty hard for you, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah? Do you remember or not really?
Not really.
I remember that it was hard for you. What was unexpected about moving overseas for you?
That we were going to go to a foreign country.
Yeah, and did you really understand what that meant?
No.
No, not really.
We were going to the same place.
Yeah, you kind of thought we were just going to the same place, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is something you learned after moving?
That going to a foreign country and trying new things is okay.
Is it good?
Yes, it's good to experience the old.
Yeah. What is the biggest lesson you learned?
That you don't have to be scared when you move to a whole new different place.
That you just don't have to be scared?
Yeah,
that's a good lesson. Because moving is kind of scary, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lexi, do you remember anything that was unexpected when we moved back? Things that may have surprised you or you may have thought were weird when we moved back to the United States?
Yeah, it was feeling a little weird, but I liked it.
Do you know what felt weird?
It felt weird being in a new country.
Was there anything in particular that was weird about it that you can think of?
It was weird being in a country that had 50 states.
Yeah, yeah. So. Yeah, that might do it. What helped you through the moves?
What helped me was, well, when when my mom and dad were cuddling me.
Yeah, we liked doing that. Zoe, what is the most exciting part about moving overseas?
For me, the most exciting part for moving overseas was me being able to move with my friends, my best long life friend. And the day we found out, I wasn't actually too excited to move overseas. I was back and forth, and I mainly was just excited for the free, unique food and the presents and the time I spent with my friends.
Presents.
I was 8.
Oh, you mean like the presents that we gave you to tell you?
Yeah.
I see. Okay. What was the hardest part, moving back to the States or going to Okinawa?
The hardest part was definitely coming back from Okinawa to the United States. Because when I moved to Okinawa, that was a period of when my brain started to develop more and would actually start remembering memories. And so when I came back, I felt like this part of me in the United States wasn't fully connected with me.
Okay.
Just because I connected with Okinawa and Japan. And they're really good food. And there's sushi and ramen. And, yeah, a lot. And just, yeah.
Okay. What was unexpected, good or bad, about moving to Japan?
Other kids sort of understanding each other.
What other kids?
Other military kids. I lived on a military base. And so I was sort of around other kids whose parents were in the military of some way. And so we all sort of understood each other and what kind of stress levels we could go through when our parents were either deployed or we just felt overwhelmed with things.
What was unexpected about moving back?
Moving to New Jersey, New York.
Is it the place that was unexpected?
It was the place and how quickly we moved. I wasn't expecting us to, like, it kind of just went by quickly in like a flash of light. Our house was packed up into nothing in 6 hours while I was at school, so.
Yeah.
It was from the safest place in the world to kind of not really a safe place in the United States.
What helped you through the moves there or back?
Talking to my best friend, I feel like we were definitely emotional support buddies for each other's therapists. Basically have a talk sesh sort of every weekend. We just basically tell each other what's happening.
What is the most exciting part about moving overseas?
Going home and eating the food again and visiting the beaches.
Okay. So you kind of knew what to expect when we went back to Okinawa. You had some memories from the first time we lived there?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were excited to live there again?
Yeah.
Okay, so what was unexpected, good or bad, about either of the moves?
I was expecting when we moved back here to live in Temecula again. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of nervous because I didn't really want to go to the same church because no one had seen me in a while. And I don't know, I was just kind of nervous to move back here.
But what was unexpected about leaving Japan?
I guess leaving Japan, like, I was expecting to stay another year.
Yeah.
And I was really excited because I could have gotten the role of Clara, and I was, like, really excited for that, like, really. So I was kind of upset about that. But it's okay because we moved at the perfect timing. Mm-hmm. Like, it was getting crazy in the dance world, so.
What helped you through the moves?
knowing that wasn't goodbye, and I'd probably visit again soon.
Visit where?
Okinawa.
You want to visit Okinawa again?
Yeah.
So, what have you learned, or what life lessons have you gained from moving like you have?
Ooh. I guess so. It's not goodbye forever. There's always next time, and you meet so many more friends along the way that you will remember your old friends, but you kind of forget them because you have all these new friends and
So you've met a lot of people. So the greatest lesson would maybe put yourself out there.
yeah.
You're the one that struggles the most with that. But you did a really great job putting down roots when we were in Japan.
That was because when I was public school, everyone else there was a military kid, and so we all knew where each other were coming from, if that makes sense. So we all knew what we had
Yeah,
gone through.
so the military kids, you guys have your own culture. And so you guys can find faster ways to relate, probably.
What were you most excited about moving back overseas?
The food, all that was really great, but also just being able to kind of see what my, or relive my childhood and, get more like really cool stories just living overseas.
Yeah, because we were going back to Okinawa.
Yeah.
What is the hardest part about moving overseas?
I mean, moving itself, just, I mean, saying bye to people, that's tough. It gets old. So.
Yeah, we definitely put down roots in between our two times in Okinawa. How's the transition been coming back from overseas?
Really, I mean, maybe just better than even going to Okinawa because I get to, and hang out with all my friends again.
The friends you had before we moved.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're very fortunate to come back to the same area. So as far as moving as a teen, moving as a kid, what are the biggest lessons that you've learned from that? What are the greatest things that have come out of moving?
The ability to like do it over and over again, so I won't be new to it when I'm moving out, so it'll be a lot easier.
That'll never happen.
So now that we've heard from our craft projects, now it's time to hear from our fellow crafters about their take on moving with kids in the military.
What advice do you have for service members preparing to move overseas with kids?
Advice for moving overseas with kids? Don't do it. No, I'm just kidding. The biggest thing is, you'll hear everybody say that you should involve the kids in every single aspect of it and do all these things to make sure that they're part of it. My biggest advice is just to make sure that everything is taken care of for them so that they don't have to think about, the next school. They don't have to think about what their house is going to look like. They don't have to like show them what it's going to be. But there's a lot of people that talk about involving them in the decisions, and I think that's just a lot for their little brains to kind of to think of and take up. So making sure that they can just show up and be kids, I think that was the biggest thing. Even for the older kids, when with the teenagers, they kind of wanted to know what they were coming into, but if you just lay it out and present it in an easy, consumable way, it makes the transition a whole lot easier.
So, with everything that's difficult moving overseas, what would you say is probably the biggest difference between when they're younger and when they're older, since we've done this twice with vastly different age groups?
So when they're younger, there's more like irrational breakdowns. Like you don't know why it's happening, and it makes it difficult because you're like, I don't know what's happening. Just get on the plane. Like, let's just go. But when they're older, I guess it's really just the teen angst. It's rough because it's the teen angst. When they're in that mid point, like when we came back from Japan, that nine to 12 year old age frame or time frame is difficult because they're not children and they're not teens. So it's like squishy. So you get a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of the issues. There's differences in the issues you got to deal with.
So which is easier, moving with the older kids or the younger kids? Ta-da!
Ta-da! I think moving with, they're all about the same. It's just differences.
Different degrees. Ta-da! Yeah. I mean,
the little ones are fun and the big ones are fun.
They are, just so, in different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is the impact on you when moving for work gives you no option and it means moving the kids?
It's painful because you can see the pain. You don't want to uproot them, especially toward the end. It's like knowing that you're taking away their stability, and it's like it's not your decision, but it's the life that it's the profession that you've chosen is affecting their stability.
You mean like the stability of the community and like the physical house, not the home?
Correct. But like there is a difference in kids, and our kids always find it when they go into new places and they're around kids that have been together their entire lives.
Yeah.
There's a difference in connection between those kids and military kids. Military kids, they're always having to fit in and always having to find new ways to fit in with those crowds, and it's tough on them and it hurts the parents a lot. That's one of the reasons why there's like military families probably are closer, is because that they are all they have. And even inside the cycle of PCSs, when you go to different places, you know, their friends are going to leave in a year or two. And
because they're off cycles. Yeah.
Yeah. Cycles.
Yeah. So what would you say is probably the best part about having kids with this career? I mean, aside from having a family and having children, like the opportunities they've been given, what do you feel is like the best aspect of it?
I mean, the financial stability, being able, like dad is always getting a paycheck, is good, because they never have that same like need or want financially.
Such a dad answer.
Well, that's kind of a rule.
Yeah.
So there's that, but then there's also, the ability for them to experience different cultures, different educational opportunities. Yeah, it's just the breadth and range of opportunities are something that military kids get that other kids don't really get.
That's the take on moving from some of our kids and one Marine making this life possible. Tune in to our next episode to listen to a few more stories from these amazing kids detailing their experiences as military children.
Thank you for listening today. Follow us on Instagram at Virtual Compound Podcast for more content and the latest updates.
We changed it. All you had to do is say, welcome back to the Virtual Compound. I'm Amelia. You're good.
I am literally following instructions.
You are, but then you said you weren't going to be able to do it, so we changed it for you.
You said I'm supposed to read the pink.
Read that face.
He's so cute. Oh my God.
It was with the guys, like, interviewing our husbands, our fellow arts and crafters, as in our husbands.
Oh.
Because you're good at arts and crafts.
Biker. So. I get it.